coming up on this week's book show. In Roddy Doyle's latest novel, Love, Joe and Davy are two old friends who meet at a Dublin pub for a night of reconnecting and hard drinking. Joe has a burning secret. Davy has a concealed sorrow. Roddy Doyle is the Booker Prize-winning author of Patty Clark, Ha Ha Ha, and The Commitments. Roddy Doyle on this week's book show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. In Roddy Doyle's latest novel, Love, Joe and Davy are two old friends who meet at a Dublin pub for a night of reconnecting and hard drinking. Joe has a burning secret. Davy has a concealed sorrow. With each pint, there are further nods to nostalgia and discussions of current concerns. The pair has a four-decade history, of which they don't always agree upon, but with each bar stool sat upon, they get closer to the truth and each other. Roddy Doyle is the Booker Prize-winning author of Patty Clark, Ha Ha Ha, and The Commitments, just to name two. It is a great pleasure to welcome Roddy Doyle to this week's book show. What a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So in describing the book in the introduction, I do talk about it as being a conversation. Was that the intent for it to be one long conversation?
I suppose when I decided I would start with these two men just talking to each other and that I was writing a novel, that inevitably a large chunk of the book was just going to be these two men talking. And it was going to remain two men. There was nobody else going to join them on a stool or at a table. I don't think I saw it in front of me when I was starting the book, but I suppose having made the decision, I knew quite quickly that this was it. Essentially, the spine of the book was going to be a conversation that takes place over the course of an evening. But that's as much as I had in my head, I've got to say. I suppose it's like a lot of great decisions or bad decisions we make. If we knew the consequences, we'd put the brake on, perhaps. So it's just as well we don't.
I remember many years ago talking to you about the writing of Patty Clark, Ha Ha Ha, and you told me then that was a book that you assembled, basically.
Yeah.
You wrote in bits and bytes and stops and starts, and then had it all and kind of assembled it. It seems almost in a way that is how this, am I right, that this came away in a similar way?
In a way, yes. Not quite as much. Like with Patty Clark, literally, I didn't know what I was doing for a long time. But I knew I was going to put together broadly a year in the life of this child. But I remember sitting on the floor of what was my office then and, you know, just surrounded by paper and taking bits of paper and deciding, well, that goes with that and that goes with that, and gradually assembling it into a kind of spiral. The story was almost like a spiral. In this case, I knew quite early, it starts with the two men talking and it goes on into the evening. And I knew that in terms of plot, there wasn't much more to it than that. It's what they talk about, I suppose, is more important. But there was a certain amount of assembling when I was finished the first draft. But I think I'm right in saying that when I was writing it, I didn't feel there was, when I was looking over what I'd written, I didn't feel there was anything missing. What I felt perhaps was that some of the stuff wasn't in the right order. And that some of the stuff deserved more attention and some of the stuff deserved a bit less. And I'd have to do a big edit on one chunk and actually add to another chunk, a different type of edit, if you like. So it wasn't quite the same. It reminded me more of writing my first novel, The Commitments, where I sat and once I had my character speaking, I began to make up the rules about dialogue, how to present it, what words to deliberately misspell to try and achieve the Dublin accent, and which shortcuts to take, again, to try and achieve what seems like real conversation on a page. And I have vivid memories of doing that, you know, 34 years ago. I was recalling it when I was writing a lot of the dialogue, particularly in the later stages of this novel, because as the men drink and go deeper into the evening, in a way, they're becoming their younger selves and they're becoming a pair of Dublin lads again. And particularly the narrator, who has lived actually outside of Ireland most of his adult life, he's been living in England. When he comes back to Dublin a couple of times a year, he doesn't just take his toothbrush out of his bag and a shirt. He also takes a certain vocabulary out of his bag. He can use words and phrases and rhythms that he doesn't use when he's in England. And he gradually becomes a Dublin lad again. And between the drink and the alcohol and the company, their accents become stronger. And I was having to make sure that it was, you know, if it was consistent, and a lot of work, and it was kind of painstaking, but hugely enjoyable, went into them reverting to their old selves. And while I was doing it, I was very vividly reminded of writing that very first book.
Roddy Doyle is our guest in this week's book show. The name of the new novel is Love. I want to talk about that, the Dublin accent and you're writing about it, but let's talk first about the conversation itself, because these men are in their 60s or near 60s, and they knew each other in their 20s. They are friends, and yet they have spent, as you said, one of the characters lives in the narrator lives in England. So in this case, they're really meeting out of habit, aren't they?
They are, yeah. It's almost they're running on empty. It's old time's sake as much as anything else. They went to high school together and then stayed in touch afterwards. And there was a key few years when, in many lives, they shared the one life, in a way. They lived for each other, really. And when they saw, you know, an attractive woman, they saw her together, so to speak. Or if they were sneering at something, they sneered together. They created their own moral, political world together for a few years and then went their separate ways. One of them literally, as he said, he left the country and went to live in another one. And over the years, they would meet occasionally. They stopped drinking, you know, that kind of pub crawl thing as they got older, meet for something to eat, basically keep in touch, the odd email. But it's more habit than anything else, really. But this night is a bit different. One of them makes a revelation that sends them spinning back 37 years. And the other is in Ireland for a particular purpose, not just his usual trip home. It adds an edge, well, you know, to put it mildly, to the evening. So there's a sense, and the narrator mentions it several times, this might be the last time they ever meet.
Mm.
And I suppose it's a question that if people are drawn into the book, they might be asking themselves, is this the last time they'll meet? And if it is this a good or a bad thing?
That's such an interesting point, because in reading it, I felt that this was at times, you know, the closest of friendships and one of those friendships that you feel that you have with people, especially male friendships, where you can be apart for a long period of time and then start talking to somebody and it's as if you never stopped.
Yeah.
And yet you can also see it ending and never reconnecting again.
Yeah. They're almost like a pair of seagulls at a landfill picking at the past, so to speak. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And depending on which piece of rubbish they pick up and swallow, the success or failure of the evening would depend on it. It's almost like a delicate thing, a delicate diplomatic act that Davy at one point, you know, you feel that he's hoping that everything will be okay. At the other time, he's grown so impatient with Joe, his friend, that he just wants to stand up and leave. He just wants to go, you know. Actually, towards the end of the evening particularly, they've done too much living together, really, for a casual separation.
Mm.
And I know exactly what you mean. And I think perhaps it's heightened in these times when it's actually meeting old friends can be quite difficult. I'm just after meeting a couple of friends and I haven't seen one of them in 6 months. And normally I'd see him several times a week. And I've known him since I was 18, you know, which is, if I do my math properly, it's 44 years. Whereas like up until about 6 months ago, it wouldn't have occurred to me that this would be difficult, that, you know, arranging to meet him and being in a position to meet him was going to be possible. So I think even though I wrote the book 2 years ago or finished it 2 years ago or almost 2 years ago, I think that's still true. That's this delicate. There are sometimes there's a key experience you share that cements a friendship forever. And then there are others that are dependent on habit, an interest in football, perhaps an interest in the theater or something like that. And you can pick up on the conversation as if you'd never been apart.
You write in the novel, and I'm not giving anything away because it says this in the book jacket, but Joe has left his wife and family for another woman, Jessica. Davey knows her too, and she was the girl of their dreams 4 decades earlier.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that relationship, obviously, to the woman, but also to really the power of the pub in the novel, the safe space that allows the two of them to have this conversation, and that safe space that it gave them to both over a period of time to tell very intimate, intricate dealings with details of their lives.
Yeah, it's for men of my generation, I think, older, maybe a bit younger as well, the pub is the place you can go to be in the company of other men. Women are much better at arranging venues and excuses to meet. Men are stuck in the rut of the pub. It's a nice rut to be in if it's open. You know, that's the problem for the last 6 months. We're all a bit homeless because the pubs have been shut. But, you know, just to give you an example, I mean, the house I'm living in at the moment, where I'm speaking at the moment, we've been living here 16 years, I think. And my closest friends, you know, men who I went to high school with, they came when we moved in to have a look at it. And I think they came here, we had a bit of a do for my 50th birthday about 12 years ago. And I don't think they've been in the house since, and I haven't been in their houses. We just don't go to each other's houses. We're not interested. We meet in the pub that happens to be about equidistant from all our houses. And I don't think it's a male preserve anymore. It was when the two men were younger men. It's just where you can go and just leave a lot of the anxieties and leave a lot of the, you know, a lot of the uniforms outside and just be yourself. You know, it's an escape in a way. And again, because of the times we're living in, I haven't missed at all. I was reading something about alcohol consumption during the pandemic and, you know, liquor sales going through the roof. But I've actually, I would imagine, I've been drinking considerably less because I haven't been going to a pub at all. And I don't miss that side of it at all. And I was talking to an elderly man recently who says that, you know, he hasn't had a drink in a year or so because he had surgery and was told he shouldn't drink again. And he quite happily gave up drink. But he says he misses the company, you know,
right.
The banter. What we call the slagging, you know, this gentle mocking, this affectionate mocking that all men indulge in. And that's what he misses. And I would be the same, I think, yeah. But the pub is vital.
The language that you use, that as these two men are in a drunken state, that the narrator who is not living in Ireland, but certainly is from there, the change of that language, the change of the accent, if you will, of how that comes out. Was that a challenge to write? It's beautifully done.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, it's always a challenge, you know, it's always a challenge. That's my 12th novel. And I find one of the challenges now is not so much coming up with something to write about, but coming up with something that I can securely think I haven't done before. There have been occasions when I'm writing away and I think this is a bit familiar. And I stop and I think, well, I've written this before. Not literally word for word, but I've written something very like this before. And it's not a nice feeling. It's a horrible feeling, really, in many, many ways. So that's one of the challenges I find when I, as I, you know, and I've plenty to write about, but one of the challenges is just to make sure I don't, you know, somehow or other end up replicating myself or slipping into a rut that I'm not aware of. What I wanted to do was, you know, obviously, luckily, the narrator, he drinks during the evening, but when he's writing the book, he's stone cold sober. So that that's a huge plus, you know. We can rely on him in
right.
that regard, you know. But what I wanted to do is not, if you like, as the narrator's narrator, so to speak, the man who created the narrator, is to try and allow that language, that looseness, that the rhythm of Dublin and Ireland to kind of get into the way they were speaking without advertising it too much, without saying, and here they are after five pints of Guinness, and look at the way they're talking now. It's changed somewhat if you go back to the first 10 pages, you know. So that was the challenge, really, to do it without it, without broadcasting it, really. That I found, as I said earlier, yes, it was a challenge, but it was hugely satisfying, because in a way I felt I was using all the experience of the last decades, the experience of my working life, and in a way gathering a lot of it up and using it all over again in a new way. And that felt great.
Which is another way of saying this is a book that you certainly couldn't have written in your 20s or 30s.
It would never have dawned on me to write it, no. Mm. I remember writing a character called Jimmy Rabbit Sr. He's a central character in my second and third books, and he's the father of children, some of whom are grown up, and one of them is about to have a baby, so he's on the cusp of grandfatherdom, so to speak. And I remember thinking, you know, will I get away with this because I'm younger than he is, and now I'm 20 years older than he is. So, and one of the, none of us likes getting older, but what you do bring with you is not experience so much, I think, but an angle of looking at things. For example, you know, there's a point where if and when you lose both parents, when both your parents die, you're looking at the world in a different way from now on.
Oh, yeah.
And that's very much, this book is very much the book, a book written by somebody who has lost both his parents, for example. They're constantly, but well, particularly Davy, for reasons that are important to the plot, he's constantly checking his phone, But when I'm writing that, I'm writing it in the knowledge that he is a man and his friend is a man, his friend Joe is a man. They are men who grew up when the phone was, you know, on a table in the hall. Mm-hmm. And if you weren't beside the phone, you had to run to answer the phone. And if you arranged to meet somebody like a woman, you know, if you arranged to meet her on a Friday evening, you turned up in the hope that she was there, but you wouldn't be texting her to ask, you know, where are you or are you on your way? You just hoped for the best. So that's the world they grew up in. And then they come into this world where, you know, all privacy is gone because we're carrying computers around in our pockets. And that, I think, makes it slightly different as well. It's not the fact that they have cell phones. It's the fact that they are men who didn't grow up with cell phones, and that the author, i.e. myself, is a man who didn't grow up with cell phones but is quite comfortable with them. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
So there's all sorts of... It's very much a book written by a man who has, you know, six decades of living behind him, if that makes sense. And that affects the way that I look at not just the characters who are the same age as myself, but it's not that so much, but it's they can think backwards to a time 37 years ago because I can too. Mm-hmm. I can imagine that. It's not my experience. The story isn't my direct experience, but I couldn't have written it if I was 30.
The name of the novel is Love by Roddy Doyle. It is published by Viking. You talk about the death of your parents. I'm the youngest of five of an Irish Catholic family, and so my parents were older. My father died 10 years ago. My mother died 10 years ago. My father died 5 years ago. That was the weirdest, I mean, it's still weird, and because you feel like an orphan, you don't.
Yeah.
I have brothers. I know we're a very close family, but you don't know quite what to do with that. And I feel that really nobody tells you about that. You know, it's kind of like a huge shocker when that happens. And you write about it beautifully in the book. I assume that it deeply affected you.
Yes. I had started the book. I'd written about 10,000 words. I'm not sure how many of those 10,000 ended up in the book. But I had the conversation between the two men up and running, and I had the basic premise. When my mother fell ill, you know, she was 92, so it wasn't a shock, so to speak. But of course it was, because she had been... I recall her being in hospital once for a couple of days. But other than that, she was mentally, you know, sharp and alert and physically very well and living alone, very independent, very well. And then she fell ill. And it became apparent that, you know, she was very ill. And myself and my siblings, we tried to look after her for the last 5 months of her life. And I put the novel aside because I didn't really have the time or... I suppose what might sometimes called the headspace to concentrate on it. A few weeks after she died, I got back to the book. I wasn't aware that this was going to happen, but I suppose the energy that is in grief, that strange energy, and I've endured grief several times now, and it's never the same. The reason why we're not told about it is because there isn't one book, I'd imagine.
Right.
And you know, I've read about the stages you go through, and I don't think I recognized those stages when, if I was going through them, I didn't see the doors, so to speak. But a lot of that energy went into the book, and I finished it really, really quickly. You know, I had a first draft done in about 3 months, and I'd never written a novel that quickly before, including the very short ones. So that was one form of energy. But while it was happening, one of my closest friends, who was the same age as myself, and I'd known him since we were 12, he fell ill. He had a brain tumor. And that was a different kind of experience. That was, I think that's what gave the energy to the plot. This idea that there's a lot riding on this conversation. This could be the last time they meet, or these two men will keep each other company right up to the end. And I think that awful experience of watching my friend die, I didn't literally watch him die, but I watched him deteriorate. He died about 6 weeks after my mother. And it was a horrendous experience, I think, because we were literally contemporaries. And I fully intended going through the rest of my life having a laugh with him. And, you know, I felt robbed. And I think a lot of the energy between my mother and him, a lot of that energy and that anger and confusion went into the writing of the book and trying to make something, fashion something that in a way could be my own personal love letter to both these people.
That is beautiful. And also of friendship and of the importance of those friendship, of not just talking about your feelings, but that feeling that you have to talk about your feelings, which is what you get from these two characters. They have to talk about it.
Yes. And that's, I think, why the book is called Love. I mean, talking about feelings is extraordinarily difficult. And in a way, again, I've been using the phrase of my generation quite a lot. And I'm not sure what it means, but I think men of my generation, we're not trained to do that. I think if I was writing about younger men, it would probably have been a short story. They'd have got to the point much quicker. It's probably a really bad short story. You know, what was the point of that? But luckily, there are men who are trained not to talk about their feelings. Davy, the narrator, grew up in an extremely quiet house, in a silent house. His mother had died when he was a child, and his father was a very, very, very quiet man. I think the inspiration that came from my own mother's experience, that her mother died when she was a toddler, and her father rarely spoke. I think she was quite confident in his affection, but he rarely, rarely spoke. She, to the extent that she knew nothing about her mother, where she came from, who her people were, where they were, what her name was. And she became an extremely observant child and adult. But she grew up in a house that was, she had siblings who I'd imagine compensated in terms of making noise. But other than that, was a very quiet house. So I have Davy growing up in this very, very quiet house. How do you express your feelings to a man, his father, who never expresses his?
Mm.
So this is the problem, and they both have, you know, particularly Davy, because I think we know him a bit better because he is, after all, the narrator.
Right.
He has hit several walls in his recent years, for the simple reason, in many ways, well, it's never simple, but for the reason that he cannot, in a way, express his feelings. He can't articulate what it is he feels. Because to open your mouth and say something like that is almost automatically somehow a humiliation or an exposure.
Mm.
But they both try. They really, really try. With help from the famous Dublin brewery, it has to be said.
Guinness helps, yes.
Yeah, it does in those cases, yeah.
In your statement a moment ago, I thought was funny about if this was about a younger man, it would be a short story. And but it does seem that younger people do have, it seems that goodbyes are much more traumatic. There's a lot of emojis and feeling that is put into things that you don't quite see with people who are older.
I wouldn't be quite ready to conclude that an emoji is a feeling.
I agree with you.
It's just a little cartoon, really, isn't it? But I mean, when I was, I remember thinking about it when you know, it took me years. I think it was well into my 20s before I got the hang of even shaking hands with people. You didn't shake hands even. I'm talking about, you know, growing up in Ireland. I don't know what the practice was elsewhere, but you didn't even shake hands with people. And now I've seen, you know, my own children now, two of them are in their late 20s, one in her early 20s, and they hug one another, and they, you know, they hug their friends. And particularly my daughter, you know, when I hear her talking to her friends, when they always finish up, and I love you too, you know, and it sounds slightly daft to my ear. I love it. I think it's great, but it always sounds a bit daft because the notion of me, you know, hugging me, you know, hugging my 62-year-old friend as we part and saying, I love you. It's just, it's not even comic. It's just science fictional almost, you know, it'll never happen. But I think that's part of the reason it's a novel. It's so hard to express feelings. And the word love is great, you know, such a rich language, the English language. And the word love is so important and yet so vague.
Well, when we get so used to now that we finally got around to shaking hands, and now you can't do that anymore. So we're back to where we started.
Back to square one, yeah. Shaking elbows. It's not quite the same thing, is it?
No. The new novel is Love. It's absolutely beautiful. Roddy Doyle, thank you so much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program. I so enjoy your work, and this was such a special one to read. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Roddy Doyle's latest is Love. It is published by Viking. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.